From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 18th day of February 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson. He's at TGM. We'll hear again Gary Schnitke from the University of Illinois, an interview I did with him about crop insurance last week, some updates to it, and then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast. Drew Lerner is out of the office today, so we'll hear from Nutrien Ag Solutions Senior Meteorologist Andrew Pritchard on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Greg Johnson from TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing, now joins us as usual on a Wednesday. Hi, Greg. Thanks much for being with us. I think the big story for the day is the weather's really nice, so you're outside and listening. Thank you. it's just a gorgeous day. Trade is relatively quiet in Chicago, has been for the good part of the week. Tell me about it, please.
Yeah, corn is just stuck in the middle. December corn is trading around 460, and it's been between 450 and 470 forever, and so we're stuck right in the middle of the range. The old crop March corn contract is in the lower half of that 425 to 450 range. Farmers are a little bit more undersold on old crop corn. We think they're only 63% sold. Normally, they're probably more closer to 70 or 75% sold at this time of year. So there's some old crop corn hanging over the market. That's probably why we're in the lower part of that trading range. But the new crop corn, right in the middle. It's been dry. Farmers are talking about how dry it is, but it's only February, and that doesn't seem to have translated into much concern at the Board of Trade. We do get an acreage number from the Ag Outlook Forum here Thursday, Friday. Maybe that'll help us out. Just looking back, the last 5 years of corn acres have been 93, 88, 95, 91, and 99 last year for an average of 95. So if you just go with the averages, we may see a 95 number come out on corn in the next couple of days. And if you use a 182 yield, that's a 15.8 billion bushel supply, and we're using a little over 16 billion. So we will cut down the carryout a little bit, but not much. 2.1 might go down to 1.8. So it basically is going to take a weather problem, I think, to really get this market excited. Otherwise, we just need to continue to sell at that upper end of that range, and I think we'll get chances to do that this spring and summer. But as far as making all new highs closer to $5 without a weather problem, I guess I don't see that in the cards.
The Ag Forum starts, as you mentioned, tomorrow. The grains outlook, along with the rest of the outlooks, are all due to be released at 6 a.m. Central, 7 o'clock in the Eastern time zone. We'll talk about those during both the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week tomorrow. On the range, being at the top end of farmers' been good about making sales, new crop for corn and soybeans at the top ends of the range?
No, corn's zero. You know, we're basically at zero on new crop corn, and I guess I don't blame them. I mean, I think we'll get a chance to sell 475 December corn at some point in time. We're at 460 today, so I'm not looking for a big rally, but you know, there's no penalty for not selling new crop corn today versus a month from now or 3 months from now. So I guess I'm willing to be patient. New crop beans, we are seeing a little bit of interest. New crop beans were $1.20 higher than where we were back in April when we made the lows, and we're only 15 cents off the highs that we made back in November of 2025. So we're at some very good prices here recently, and I really do think that farmers are thinking about taking advantage of this soybean rally, but we haven't seen it translate into actual sales yet. I think that farmers are concerned, just like the speculators and everybody else. What if China buys the extra 8 million metric tons of beans that Trump tweeted about a week ago? That's got people concerned. And, you know, if it's all additional demand, that's one thing. We could see $12 beans. But if that just means we're going to have other countries buy beans from Brazil instead of from the U.S., it really is an additional demand, in which case then these prices probably would be good level to sell at. So there's a lot of uncertainty with that tweet, and I guess uncertainty sometimes is good. We get some higher highs, but also we can get some lower lows if the funds get disappointed and bail out of their positions. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see on that.
Hey, thanks much for being with us today and for coming over to the All Day Ag Outlook in a couple of weeks at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana.
Looking forward to it, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with TGM. If you'd like to join us at the Beef House for the All Day Ag Outlook, you can do that. Just purchase your tickets. They're online right now at willag.org. Let's return now to a conversation I had last week with University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnitke. You've heard this once, but it is worth repeating. We discussed the March crop insurance decisions. Now, so far, during this crop insurance price-setting month, the projected corn price is lower than last year. However, soybean guarantees, they're slightly higher. This conversation, again recorded last week, highlights the impact of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which increased subsidy levels for SCO and DCO to 80%. Due to these increased subsidies, Schnitke, as you'll hear, advises farmers to consider adding ECO and maybe SCO to their crop insurance portfolios. Now, for producers in central Illinois, he specifically recommends looking at adding ECO at 95% and potentially lowering the underlying revenue protection or RP coverage to maintain similar premium cost. If you want, you can see these numbers and play around with them on an updated insurance evaluator tool on the FarmDoc website. It's good across the states of Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota. Now let's pick up with last week's crop insurance conversation. I asked Gary to lay out the basics at the time.
Right now, if we were setting those prices, we would be looking at a $4.58 price for corn. That's about not quite halfway through the month. That would be a little bit below last year. So, we would be setting our projected pricing guarantees a little bit lower. For soybeans, we're looking at $10.93 right now. That would be slightly higher than last year, just a bit. It was $10.54 last year. So corn guarantees down a little bit, soybean guarantees up a little bit. Find it interesting that if we're looking at where the futures markets are, everybody's talking about good large corn crops, but the futures markets are suggesting soybeans are more profitable this year than last year.
Again, just a reminder, I recorded this last week, so those numbers are a week old. I did ask Gary also to talk about the One Big Beautiful Bill Act.
So this year, or the One Big Beautiful Bill, the big change that's impacting this year is that they increased the subsidy levels on all the combo products and on SCO and ECO. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act increased the subsidy level for SCO and RMA administratively and also increased the ECO subsidy level. Those are now at 80%, up from 65, and that will cause that decision to look at ECO and SCO. I would suggest that all farmers take a look at ECO and SCO. That 80% subsidy will lower the premiums, and when we look at our insurance evaluator, combinations of ECO and even lowering our underlying RP coverage levels will result in lower premiums and about the same risk gains as if you had had a RP at 85% coverage level last year.
Let's break down a couple of those. First, quick question. Did RP subsidy change as well, or did it stay the same?
RP subsidy levels also went up. They went up on both basic and optional units and on enterprise units. So this year, you will see lower premiums, if all else is equal, for combo products. The increase is less for the basic, optional, and enterprise units of the combo product. That increase on SCO is worth looking at.
Now that we have that out of the way, so it sounds as if, just based on all things equal, that if we were to buy this same product this year and had last year prices, it would be cheaper to do so. And because we have lower prices, it's actually, depending, I suppose, on volatility and how things end up, going to be cheaper as well. Is that a deuce there, that, you know, two times that you'll get a reduction in total crop insurance costs?
Yeah, so and you're exactly right. By the way, we're not to the point where we're setting the volatility. That's only the last 5 days of the month. So, but if you looked at it, particularly for corn, it would be lower, and that will lower premiums for combo product and SCO. So, yes, that will have an impact. It will. If you have the same APH, likely lower your premium cost this year versus last year. There's some other things that go on too. They change the rates, so we haven't really looked at whether those rate changes have increased or decreased costs this year. But overall, you can expect a bit lower premiums for those combo RP products.
This is the point where I need to interject again. These numbers are all floating and will do so until the end of the month of February. Volatility, of course, is set in the last 5 days. The prices are set throughout the month of February, and then the March decisions can be made. Now, on the third day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, you can hear Gary's final decisions as it's related to ECO, SCO, and crop insurance decisions. But you need to be there. The cost is just $40. You can sign up right now at willag.org. Now let's turn back to the conversation with Gary Schnitke held last week. We'll drill down on highly productive soils in central Illinois, a corn-soybean rotation, and what decisions can and maybe should be made.
If you're in central Illinois, you're probably at the 80 or 85% coverage level for RP. The first thing that I would suggest looking at is adding ECO at the 95% level. The 95% level is, and that'll add to your premium, by the way. So just adding that, you're going to probably add $45 to your premium.
I will make note that this was the same recommendation you had last year, but you were like, you can do it, but this year the subsidy makes it worthwhile. The extra subsidy makes it worthwhile.
The extra subsidy makes it worthwhile, and also RMA increased expected yields across the state, and those expected yield increases were pretty large. So the combination of that 80% and those higher expected yields caused that to look like something you should look at. All right, so now you're thinking adding ECO and you're at RP 80 or 85%. I would think about lowering that coverage level to maybe 75%, maybe 65%. Just take a look. Here's what you're doing. You're increasing the subsidy level because the subsidy level goes up as you increase that coverage level. So you're increasing that. And you'll find that with the combination of that, and even if you add SCO, you'll be at the same premium level as last year. And our insurance evaluator says you'll have roughly the same downside risk. If you really want to maximize everything, stay at RP 85% and add ECO 95% to it. You're adding to the cost. That will be your quote unquote best risk level. But if you want to lower those, you can get a pretty good lower end risk.
If you're at 85 plus the ECO to 95, are you skipping 1%? In there with the SCO, is that correct from 85 to 86?
Yeah, that's almost a secondary issue. I mean, honestly, that's.
But my question is, if you are, say, you go to 65, how much are you skipping?
All right. So first, yes, you would be skipping some, and then SCO begins adding risk protection, but your big risk protection comes by adding that 95% on top. And if you think about it, in Illinois, central Illinois, it takes a lot to trigger losses, and 5% loss is easier to trigger than 85 or 75% loss. So, and again, if you want to keep your premiums within some range, you can do it by lowering the RP coverage level.
Recapping that last part of the conversation, now Schnittke is advocating farmers look at taking 95% ECO and lowering the RP coverage. Remember, there are three subsidized crop insurance products which work together. The RP coverage is a choice at 65, 70, 75, 80, or 85%. SCO covers from the RP choice to 86%, and it's no longer tied to the ARC or PLC decision, so it's just available. And finally, ECO ups the coverage to 90 or 95%. You can choose to forego the SCO, by the way, leaving a gap. Again, it's probably best just to come see Gary in person at the All Day Ag Outlook Tuesday, March the 3rd at the Beef House. Tickets online at willag.org, willag.org, or at the FarmDoc daily website. Finally, there's a brand new updated tool connected to that FarmDoc website. I asked Gary to tell me about the Insurance Evaluator.
We have the Insurance Evaluator. It was specifically designed to look at SCO and ECO combinations with your combo product. So you put in your RP product, maybe you put in what you did last year, and then we can compare what some alternatives are.
Good in all the counties around the nation?
Good in from Ohio to Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota. We're working on releasing it to other counties, but we feel really comfortable in the midst of the Corn Belt.
I spoke with University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnittke during the second week of February. The crop insurance decisions are due by mid-March. The finalized numbers will come out at the end of February. Let's take a look at the weather forecast for some of the growing regions across the planet now. Drew Lerner is not available this afternoon, so we're joined by Andrew Pritchard. He's the senior meteorologist at Nutrien Ag Solutions. Thank you so much for filling in this afternoon. I appreciate that, Andrew. I want to stay in North America today, if we could, because there's a lot of things happening. For instance, today, it is just magnificent outside. It may come at a cost at some point. Can you tell me about this current weather and maybe some risk of storms that might be involved with tomorrow?
Absolutely. And you're right. It's a beautiful, warm, windy, early spring day across a lot of the Midwest and back into the central and southern plains. And really, before I get into a potential, you know, severe weather risk here in the Midwest, I want to talk about the impacts of this warm, windy weather when you combine it with a couple other ingredients, that being very dry, you know, soils, dry vegetation, and available fuels for potential grass fires and field fires, which we've seen beginning yesterday. We saw some really intense fires get going where we had an extremely critical fire weather risk, that being across portions of Kansas, Oklahoma, into Texas, New Mexico, and eastern Colorado, even up into parts of southwestern Nebraska. But a couple of very intense fires, one particularly in the Woodward, Kansas area, or I'm sorry, Woodward, Oklahoma area that crossed into Kansas later on during the afternoon and evening. We still have critical risks for a fire across that portion of the southern plains that I just mentioned, that being the Oklahoma and Texas panhandles, portions of southwest Kansas, southeastern Colorado into eastern New Mexico. But with this area of low pressure, kind of a lead wave of low pressure across the Great Lakes right now, the one that is bringing the warm, windy, beautiful weather to Todd and I here in central Illinois, we've actually got these critical fire weather values, critical fire weather risks expanding into portions of Iowa, in northwestern Illinois, portions of southwest Wisconsin, and far eastern Nebraska as well. We've got red flag warnings in effect across a lot of these areas. So, you know, it's important that we're just, you know, taking precautions with this. I know it's exciting to get out and maybe start some early field work, but in these areas where we have these elevated fire weather, you know, risks, any fire that begins could really quickly become out of control. And that's what we saw yesterday and what we're hoping not to see happen, you know, so bad as we move through the next 24 hours today. Now, as we get into the forecast over the next 24 hours, we've got another area of low pressure that's going to be ejecting across the southwestern U.S., lifting into the Ohio Valley during the day on Thursday. Now, this one won't have a ton of moisture to work with, but it looks like it may have just enough to get some scattered storms going in the St. Louis area, maybe early in the afternoon, with those storms then tracking from west to east across portions of central and southern Illinois, eventually making their way over toward maybe the Indianapolis area as we get into Thursday afternoon and evening. Now, what we're expecting here is maybe a cluster of storms that it's kind of an interesting, unique risk that we can sometimes get here in the Midwest, where maybe the only and the most significant risk is a couple of tornadoes with these storms. It's sometimes where we don't even see these storms get tall or intense enough to produce a lot of lightning, but we've got a rotating updraft that could maybe, again, produce a couple tornadoes and maybe some reports of some hail across the Ohio River Valley during the day, Thursday into Thursday evening. Now, the pattern does remain relatively active as we move forward over the next 7 to 10 days, but I'll be honest, the models have really struggled to have any sort of consistency, between themselves. And I mean, run-to-run consistency with the same models is changing a lot. And we've also got big disagreement across the board when it comes to, trying to figure out the storm track here and which of these storms are going to, maybe bring some moisture that we desperately need. And I'll be honest with you, over the last 12 to 24 hours, the trend has been maybe a little bit less wet across some of these areas, talking about the Red River of the south into the lower and mid-Mississippi valleys, the Ohio River valleys, where it's been rather dry over this winter. So it is warm and windy today, and there's a couple, trouble spots that come along with that, but we're continuing to just kind of watch this pattern sort itself out over the next couple of weeks.
You think the near-term rains will have a chance to do much, if anything, about the drought, particularly in East Central Illinois?
This system that's going to come through Thursday, the problem with it is we're talking about probably isolated to scattered showers and storms, so some people are going to definitely get a drink. I mean, where we get the heavier storms to go, we'll get some moisture in the soil, but what we really need to start to take a bite out of this drought, which, you can trace its origins certainly back to the end of last summer, but a lot of the eastern Corn Belt here, talked about portions of East Central Illinois. We were dry going back to the fall of 2024, and then 2025 came down to be one of the top three driest years on record in some of these areas. So what we really need is a few really big storm systems that produce a wide swath of rain, several states wide that, maybe we get a rain that lasts a day or two or something like that. But if you just go back to the beginning of this water year, going back to last fall, a lot of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio were chasing a 4-inch deficit, and then it gets even higher as you go down south into parts of the lower and mid Mississippi Valley. So it is good to get some moisture. I certainly don't want to scoff at it. Some rain is better than no rain. But the problem here with this, first area of low pressure today and the next one tomorrow is they're rather moisture starved, and we're not getting a big widespread area of rain like we should, or like we would like, I should say. And instead, we're getting more of the hit or miss variety. And that really is why I'm kind of concerned about, some of the change in the forecast heading into next week, where if we would have talked maybe 3 days ago, I would have said that, it seems like we've got storm after storm kind of lined up here, bringing that broad brush, half an inch or an inch of rain with each one of them. And now we're getting kind of these drier storm systems where really a lot of Illinois, East Central Illinois, surrounding portions of Illinois into Indiana and Ohio, over the next 10 days, there's just not a lot at this point. We get a couple of these storm systems. The pattern certainly active. There's a couple areas of low pressure, but just kind of looking at the latest model output that came out overnight, if I were to just kind of verbatim buy what it's, giving to me, we're talking about a few tenths of an inch, maybe up to a half an inch in some of these areas that desperately need, 4 or 5 times that as we head into the first part of March. So it looks like parts of the southern U.S., I'm talking about, maybe far eastern Arkansas and, into Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia. That's certainly some dry areas that are going to get some rain, on the order of a couple of inches. And parts of Kentucky and Tennessee may, hope to overachieve in some areas here and push beyond that half an inch to 1 inch threshold. But certainly have seen a bit of a downtrend on the at least near-term rainfall forecast, whereas it looks like that February 21st through the 28th timeframe, that last week of February, looked loaded with storm systems that were going to bring badly needed moisture. And now they look a little moisture starved to me, if compared to what it was maybe 48 hours ago. And You know, I'm kind of was looking at the European model when I was saying that. And as we're talking, just wanted to make sure the GFS, the American model here, is kind of aligned with that. And it certainly is. You know, East Central Illinois, all the way over towards parts of Western Ohio, we're talking about less than half an inch of rain over the next 10 days and coming in isolated hit or miss fashion here is, again, some moisture is better than none. But this is not necessarily a pattern that's really going to take a big bite out of this drought, at least over the next 10 to 14 days, it seems.
Thank you so much, Andrew, for all the information. I really appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate the opportunity to join you today, Todd.
That's Senior Meteorologist at Nutrien Ag Solutions, Andrew Pritchard. He joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.